Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the session on update management in Windows Server 2012. My name is Erin Chappell. I'm a group program manager in the Windows manageability team. One of the things that my team delivers is Windows Server Update Service, or affectionately we refer to it as WSUS. And I'm joined on stage today.
I'm Mallikarjun. Hi, I'm the PM for cluster-aware updating, and I'm going to talk to you towards the later part of this presentation.
Fabulous. All right, thanks. So let's get started and talk a little bit about what we're going to cover in today's session. We know, we hear from you on a fairly consistent basis that updating continues to be one of the challenges that exist within your environment. And it's been an important investment for us in the 2012 release. We've made some significant improvements in Windows Server Update Service, or WSUS, which I'll walk through in more detail a little later. But one of the important pillars in this release, or investments in this release, as you heard in the keynote that Satya gave on Monday, is around increasing the server availability and uptime. And that has put new kind of pressures around patching, especially in cluster scenarios. And we're excited to introduce that we have a new cluster-aware updating that extends the WSUS functionality that we provide in the box and addresses the scenario to help provide you with zero service interruption. And so I'll cover the first port on WSUS, and then my colleague will come back on stage and walk you through the exciting new cluster-aware updating. So actually, before I start with that, how many folks in the room use WSUS today? Great. And how many folks use clustering or have clustering in your environments? Great. Wonderful. So hopefully today we'll give you both a mixture of what you can now do with WSUS in your environments with Windows Server 2012 and also expose you to the new functionality that we have around cluster-aware updating. So let's start off with some facts. WSUS is the most deployed update solution in the world. And I actually want to caveat these numbers a little bit because they come from our opt-in numbers. And we all know that our opt-in numbers are actually a fairly low percentage of customers who choose to send data back to Microsoft and report on what they're using in their environment. So I would, little plug for our SQIM data and providing that data back to us, we really do act upon it. It gives us a good sense of what's installed and what the install base is. But we have over 1 million WSUS servers that are actually connecting back to Windows Update. And that is actually just the front-end WSUS servers that connect up to Windows Update. It doesn't include any kind of hierarchical WSUS servers you have in your environment. So pretty significant number of machines that we're connecting with on a daily basis. And they serve over 60 million clients. Now, a client can be either an end desktop or another server that we're patching in the environment. So we get a fair amount of rich data from this that we process and we look at and we take into consideration in terms of what we're putting into the next version of an operating system. What was really interesting in this last release is with Windows Server 3.0 Service Pack 2, the adoption rate of that particular version of what WSUS actually doubled from previous versions. So we are seeing a pretty good uptick in the number of people who are moving to new versions of WSUS and using that in their environment. So pretty strong foundation of WSUS being used in the enterprise. So from all that data and the customers that we talked to, what have we heard? What were the key things with WSUS as it exists today that are problematic? The first thing that we've heard is it can be challenging to automate the installation of WSUS and its overall configuration. We added WSUS as a role in the previous release, but it was out of the box. You had to go download it, and it was loosely integrated with the tools that we deliver inside the operating system. It had a separate UI, and then we really didn't have the automation through things like PowerShell. And so there were a lot of manual steps that you needed to do or to go grab WSUtil in order to be able to perform tasks in your environment. Additionally, we've heard a desire for increase in security in the communication between the WSUS server and Windows Update to make sure that you can authenticate that you're talking to Windows Update and that you're getting patches from a known or secure source. So those are the big two issues that we've heard or kind of concerns that people have with WSUS in their existing environment. And the good news is that we've made investments in both of these areas for Windows Server 2012. So what's new in WSUS? The first thing that we've done is we've fully integrated WSUS into Server Manager. So WSUS now ships in the box. There's no need to go have a separate download. It's available in Server Manager in the tools, and I'll demo that in a second, which means you can take advantage of all of the capabilities that come with Server Manager. So you can install to a local machine, you can install to a remote machine. If you have a VHD in your environment, you want to install into that VHD, you can install WSUS into that VHD as well. So really streamlining the experience for you to get WSUS installed and up and running in your environment. We've also added PowerShell support. Now, we don't have complete coverage of everything that you can do within WSUS. I want to kind of get that on record to start with. But we have looked at what are the top scenarios that people want to do in their WSUS environment. How do I get a list of products that WSUS supports? How do I set updates for which the WSUS server should sync? How do I run WSUS cleanup? How do I approve updates? Those are all things that we've actually provided commandlets for in the box right now so that you can automate some of those basic WSUS scenarios. And you can expect over time that we'll extend this and we'll add more and more functionality with future releases of the operating system. We've also enhanced the security. So we've added SHA-256 hashes to our communication, both between WSUS and Windows Update, as well as the Windows Update agent to the WSUS server, so that we make sure that we can validate the files that are coming down, the patches that are coming down, and you can be more confident overall that updates are being delivered without tampering or kind of that man-in-the-middle type attack. So with that, let me give you a quick run-through demo of what this actually looks like. Okay, here I have a Windows 8 desktop, and I'm actually running the remote server admin tools, which allow me to take all of the administrative tools and install them on the client. You've maybe heard in other sessions that we really think that Server Core is the default installation that we want to promote moving forward. And so the optimal way in which you should be managing your environment is to install remote server admin tools onto that client machine. So if within Server Manager, I can go in and click Manage and click Add Rules and Features and go through the Add Rules and Features wizard, choose role-based installation. We're installing WSUS in this case. Select a server in my environment. So here now you have the ability to do remote installation of your WSUS servers. I'm going to pick Server Demo 2. It's going to connect to it, check and see what's installed on it already. And then I can go through and choose to install the Windows Server Update service. It's going to pull in all of the necessary dependencies that I need to have installed on that server, handle all of that for me. So it pulls in IIS, it pulls in the .NET frameworks, it installs the admin tools. I click Next. I'm not going to add any additional features at this time. So I'm going to go through and now configure the role services. I can actually separate out the various pieces of WSUS, so I can install just the database in this environment. I can install just the service, so if I wanted to have kind of the underlying platform that I wanted to programmatically go against. Those are the options that I have. And then I choose a path of where I want to store my updates. I'm just going to pick WSUS folder in the C root, click Next. And it's as easy as that. It's going to go off and install WSUS on that server. Now I'm going to close out of this at this point in time. I already have WSUS installed in my environment. I have it installed on a one machine. And what will happen is the installation will happen, but there's a bunch of post-deployment configuration tasks that need to happen. And so if I go in and I have WSUS installed on my server one, it'll give me a little information that says, hey, there's some additional configuration that's required in order to get WSUS up and running in my environment. It'll go configure the IIS, configure the database, and actually start the service. And so it's as easy as just clicking that, I think. You can also access it from here. I can click on it. It's going to go off and it's going to do all of the post configuration that I need to do, and I'll have a functioning WSUS server at the end. So integrated directly into Server Manager, and as I said again, you can do all of the things you can with the add role wizard. You can install to an offline VHD, you can install remotely as I showed in this case, or if you actually RDP into the server itself, you can install locally. So the other thing I want to show you is the commandlets. So I'm going to bring up ISE, which is the scripting environment that we have for PowerShell. Many improvements that we've added in this release. Namely, you can see on this right this little show command window. And so if you want to get familiar with the PowerShell commandlets, this is a great way to start exploring. I can just type WSUS in this window, and it'll give me a list of all of the PowerShell commandlets we provide in WSUS. So add WSUS computer adds a computer into the WSUS grouping. Approve an update allows you to approve a specific update. They're fairly self-explanatory as you go down the list and create these building blocks that you can use in your automation to use without WSUS. The one I want to show you a little bit more about is invoke WSUS server cleanup. So in the past, this was something that was a manual task that you needed to do. We had a little utility that you could use, but it was really a process that you needed to go do manually. In this release, we've provided, here you can see all of the parameters that we have so that you can actually automate going out and cleaning up removing obsolete computers, removing patches that have been superseded, patches that you haven't approved, to really do that cleanup of your WSUS server. So if I go through, I can kind of pick what I want to do this. I put in the update server I want. I have it installed on demo one. And what's great about this little show command is I can actually copy that, paste it, and it'll paste the syntax and everything for me into the script. So it's really a great way for you to get to learn both PowerShell and also explore what we provide in the WSUS environment. One more thing I'll just call out on here is that in the new version of PowerShell that ships in Windows Server 2012, we actually have integration with the task scheduler. So you could do a very cool, create your little cleanup script and then actually create a scheduled task and have that run on a regular basis in the background so you can completely automate what used to be something that you did manually and had to remember to do on a periodic basis. So with that, those are the new features in WSUS in this release. So with that, I'll invite my colleague to come back on stage and join me and walk you through the cluster aware updating.
Thanks, Erin. So when Erin earlier asked about how many folks here actually manage clusters, a fair number of hands went up, as you remember. How many of you like today's cluster patching techniques that you use? Anyone? There you go. That makes the point. Thank you. So what I'm going to do is I'll start off with a pretty high-level overview. I have a couple of different sections in my presentation. So I'm going to start with a pretty high-level overview of cluster-aware updating and then sort of peel on in a little bit and go into deeper internals of cluster-aware updating. So first of all, when we started way back on Windows Server 2012 planning, right, when we met with a bunch of customers, and the number one ask that almost always came up was, hey, we want to get through past Tuesdays without causing my highly available services to take any planned downtime, right? And when I say continuous availability, there are a number of sessions on continuous availability here, and there are some related sessions I have it towards the back of the slide deck as well. But what I mean is it's really having your operations going without planned and unplanned downtime and operating at scale without any errors, right, without any I/O errors. So we have done a bunch of improvements in Windows Server 2012, and that all relate to continuous availability. And the first thing, of course, is building those continuously available workloads that run on clusters so they can fail over without causing any planned and unplanned downtime. And cluster-aware updating is like the missing puzzle piece, right, that really gets you through past Tuesdays without any of that downtime. For example, when I say continuously available workload, I'm talking about Hyper-V with live migration or file server with transparent failover. There's a new feature that's added in Windows Server 2012. So What is cluster-aware updating? Again, this is a pretty simplistic definition. I have more and more detail coming up in slides later on. At the top level, right, it is really end-to-end cluster updating process orchestration. And the updating process itself does not cause any downtime. And CAU basically manages the entire process for you. So you basically point to a cluster and say, hey, go patch this cluster, right? And it does all the operations that are involved there end-to-end. And let's see. So one of the frequent questions that I get is, hey, you have a bunch of patching technologies that are in Windows Server, right, and related to Windows in some fashion. How do I make sense of this larger landscape? For example, Aaron just talked about WSIS, right? Where does this fit, right? So let's start from the top. And Windows Update is the overall, as you guys know, the patch delivery mechanism. That's the website where you get your GDR updates from. And broadly, there are like three categories of things to think about when you start thinking about patching technologies, right? One is what we ship inbox inside the Windows operating system itself, right? There is the Windows Update agent, and that's focused on updating a single computer. And there is Windows Server Update Services, which is the one that Aaron just talked about. And that covers a group of computers and gives you much more sophisticated approval management capabilities, right? And then there is the category of solutions that we make available as part of the System Center product portfolio. There is SCCM, the configuration manager. You can single server, multi-server focused. And then there is SCVMM that's focused on Hyper-V clusters. And SCO, the orchestrator functionality. And the reason I'm pointing out the orchestrator here is you could build workflows and you could potentially build workflows that do cluster patching in some fashion using SCO, right? So that's the connection to that. And of course, unrelated to that, there are other third-party solutions available as well that do Windows Server patching, right? So what we have just done in this release is we have added cluster-aware updating as the bottom piece there on the far left. As the new inbox solution that ships with Windows Server, and its only purpose in life is to orchestrate the end-to-end cluster updating process. So this is the next level of detail, right? What is cluster-aware updating? Tell me a little bit more detail, right? So think of it as a single-click launch of cluster-wide updating process. You, of course, there's a PowerShell commandlet for that, and there's the very nice thing about cluster-wide updating, as you will see in the demo in a few minutes. Pretty much all operations, right, all complex operations that we do, we show you actually the PowerShell commandlet that's being used under the covers in the UI itself. So even if you run through the UI once, you can copy-paste that PowerShell commandlet, and you can use it to script, right? So we can patch physical or VM clusters using cluster-aware updating. And from a mechanics perspective, cluster-aware updating, first of all, scans for applicable updates and then downloads them and installs them. And if any workloads are running on each of the cluster nodes, it moves them over, patches them, reboots the node if necessary, and brings them back, right? I have a visual coming up as well. So this is the failover cluster. Let's say the administrator wants to patch this cluster, right? The first thing is think of COW as a toolkit, right? You put it on a box on a computer, Windows Server 2012 computer. Could be one of the cluster nodes, or it could be a different machine. We'll talk more about that. And you use that to kick off the failover cluster updating process. It starts with node 1, and let's say node 1 has, in this case, my white boxes there correspond to my workloads running on the cluster node, right? So the first thing we do is drain that node, move all the workloads off of that node, and put it in a special state so we don't cause any downtime for the workloads running on that node. And then basically, either from WSIS or from Windows Update, download the updates, apply them, and reboot them as required, and then move it to a patched state. And once that specific cluster node reaches the patched state, then we go ahead and fail back all the workloads that were originally running on it, right? So that's what we do for one node. And then we repeat the process for all other nodes, right? However many nodes there are, we can support 64 nodes, which is the supported limit in Windows Server 2012. Now, this is the other frequent question I get, right? Okay, are we reinventing anything here? Or what happens to my existing WSIS approval process, as an example, right? And the answer is really, no, we are not about reinventing here at all. That's the nice thing, right? All the existing technologies that you know about and you love in Windows Server at 2012, and a bunch of them got improved in 2012, as Erin just talked about, right? They all basically remain the same. They're not changing with CoW, and we're really building on top of them. CoW is only end-to-end cluster-wide focus. That's its focus, as opposed to reinventing or recreating any of the server scope and patching tools, right? Now, what kind of updates can we actually install, right? There are different kinds of updates. When you think about updates, there are patches you get from Microsoft Update, then there are hot fixes, QFEs, right? And there are even driver updates, BIOS updates. There are a bunch of updates when you think about servers and cluster nodes. So let's walk through them. So you could obviously install the GDRs from Microsoft Update or Windows Update and WSUS, right? And the hot fixes, QFEs from a local file share, this is the new cool feature that we have added in RC release. So for those of you who are playing with the RC release, please do test it out. That's what I'm going to demo in a few minutes as well. You can put all your hot fixes in a file share and let the tool go, right? And it will install all the patches locally from that file share. And we also have built-in customization capabilities, and I'll point them out during the demo. It's super easy to install any other type of update, like let's say a BIOS update. We just had a successful demo last week internally working with the vendor, with the IHV, where we were able to use CoW and patch the BIOS on each one of the cluster nodes without any downtime. That's really cool when you think about it, right? So installing and launching, it's actually pretty simple. The installation, in one word, is all tightly integrated into failover clusters. So when you install failover cluster feature, you get cluster-aware updating WMIB to provider components as well on each one of the cluster nodes. When you install the tools in an RSET environment, and you get cluster-aware updating tools as well as part of that. So it's pretty tightly integrated across feature, tools, and installation with failover clustering. And the launching is also pretty simple. You go to Server Manager and click on the tools up there and see their green oval up there. That's how you launch cluster-aware updating. So let's go to the next level of detail. And let's just talk about, okay, how can you really use it? What are the different modes of operation, and what kind of automation does it do internally, right under the covers? So when you think about it, what we are really doing is cluster-aware updating is really automating your cluster patching runbook, right? For those of you who are not familiar with that word, when I say runbook, I'm talking about a specific IT process recipe, right? I mean, this is how you do certain things in your data center. There may be certain custom things you need to do, and then you do all these operations that I talked about, like scanning, downloading, moving the workloads, all those, right? So that's essentially a recipe for patching a cluster that you manage. And cluster-aware updating is really automating the entire recipe for you. That's the best way to think about it. What that means is we build in all the workflow logic, that's cross-cluster, node-specific, exceptions, everything that can potentially come up during the course of patching a cluster, and then we package them up into a bunch of PowerShell commandlets. That's really the core of what the feature does, right? And on top of that, we have put in a UI, a nice UI, and the computer that's really running these tools, right, the PowerShell, the core logic, UI, that's the one we call as update coordinator. And the update coordinator essentially takes the queue from the admin. The admin gives a bunch of run options and say, hey, go patch this cluster. These are my options. And there's actually a way to even sort of create a profile with those options, and so you don't need to provide them every time, so you can point to the profile and say, hey, source your options from this profile. And it just patches the failover cluster, right? The overall, what we're doing here is think of this as bringing down the total cost of ownership of owning clusters, right? Owning clusters is not so much hard. It's not, patching them is not so much harder anymore, right? It's all a much more manageable operation with the built-in feature. And the other nice thing about cluster-aware updating, and I get this question a lot, hey, what happens to all my workloads? You guys are patching, moving the workloads left and right as you patch, reboot. What, I have this nicely distributed set of workloads on my cluster. What happens to them? The answer, in short, is really nothing, right? What we try to do is we try to preserve the same load distribution of workloads as it existed at the beginning of the patching process. So even at the end, you should generally see the same same workload distribution, with the exception of there being any unplanned failures that are concurrent with your updating process that have nothing to do with Cal, right? So let's just talk a little bit about self-updating mode. There are two modes. I'm going to talk about one mode at a time, and then we'll go into which mode do you use as a user of cluster-aware updating when you start using it. Self-updating mode is as the name suggests, right? It's really, think of cluster as self-updating itself. You set some knobs on the cluster and say, hey, you are now configured for self-updating. Go patch yourself going forward. I'm not going to come back and tell you on every patch Tuesday what you should do, right? So there is a set of options and a schedule that you can define, and it automatically does all the operations for you. That's an extremely nice feature for some or most of you guys. Just out of curiosity, how many folks here manage like more than 20 clusters? Okay, a fair number of you, okay. And think this is really your friend. Self-updating is your friend, right? When we hear, what we hear from customers is, we have this 20 clusters or 30 clusters, and I need to patch them all during this IT maintenance window. That's like 2 hours or 4 hours every month, or sometimes even shorter, right? So you, in those scenarios, this is a great technology. You just configure them all, and you can continue to monitor them. You're not giving up control, but on the other hand, you're delegating all the grunt work to the feature, so the cluster self-updates itself. And it's also a great fit, by the way, for cluster-in-a-box scenarios. Let's say you have a branch office that don't have local IT experts, a local support desk, right? You have a couple of clusters there providing locally available services. Again, this is a great option because you can just configure those cluster-in-a-box appliances and say, you're on your own, and I'll keep monitoring you once in a while. So from a mechanics perspective, what's happening is the update coordinator functionality that I talked about, the PowerShell, the core logic, all of that runs on one of the cluster nodes, right? So that's really what's going on. And there is more to it. So what does it exactly buy me, right? That's the next question. It turns out that it's much more significant than simply running on one of the cluster nodes. In doing that, what we are making is the cluster updating process itself is now highly available, right? Think about it, right? When you start the patching process and the cluster is self-updating itself, what happens if that computer that's currently acting as the update coordinator goes down? Well, with the self-updating mode, the cool thing is it just fails over to a different node because the updating process itself is resilient to planned and unplanned failures. And just continues the patching cycle from the other computer, other cluster node. And the other key thing to keep in mind is it's not really mutually exclusive with respect to on-demand patching, right? It's just like your PC. Let's say you have a group policy or something on your PC that puts the auto-download, auto-update schedule on your PC, but you can go to it any time and say, hey, I want to patch my PC now. You can do it, right? Just like that, it's pretty analogous. You can put a cluster in self-updating mode, but you can also do what we call as remote updating anytime. You connect to the cluster and kick off the updating run anytime. We also have configured but on hold kind of functionality. What this means is, think about a practical situation, right? You have some maintenance work required on your WSUS server, or you may have an incorrect patch that you just want to pull back, deny the approval for, or some other patching infrastructure-related operation you want to take on your infrastructure. But you do want the clusters, so you don't want the clusters to self-update during that time when you're doing your maintenance, but you do want the configuration to just continue on beyond that point. So what you do is basically suspend, you disable the functionality for a bit, do your maintenance work, and then come back and re-enable it. So you don't, that way you don't have to reconfigure the self-updating, although reconfiguring it in itself is pretty straightforward. And compatible with VCO pre-staging. VCO is the virtual computer object, and cluster-aware updating requires a VCO, but it's pretty, that's pretty typical for several other clustered workloads. And you can pre-stage the virtual computer objects that CAU uses under the covers. So what is remote updating mode? Like I said, I'm going to also talk about remote updating and then sort of go back to comparing the two modes of operation. So remote updating means you're connecting to the cluster as a remote computer, right? You can run your tools, your cluster-aware updating tools as RSAT, even from a client computer, and connect to any cluster and kick off the cluster updating process. And you can see much richer progress updates as it happens. You can basically see them real time. And the nice thing about this is that you can, if you have minimal server core computers, like you don't even want .NET and PowerShell running on your cluster nodes for whatever reason, even server core installs PowerShell by default, but if you don't want that for any reason, you can use remote updating. It requires the minimal amount of functionality on the nodes because it's really remotely updating the cluster nodes in question. And this is really how it operates conceptually, right? Your update coordinator is outside the cluster and it's reaching out to each one of the cluster nodes and updating it. So, okay, which mode won, right? If you really want to try, and just see how the feature works. You can try remote updating. That's a good one to start with. If you have a scenario like, let's say, branch office scenarios, as I talked about, are scenarios where you manage a whole bunch of clusters and you cannot afford real-time attention on all of them at the same time, then self-updating is really the way to go. And self-updating also gives you a resilient updating process. So your updating itself is protected from planned and unplanned failures. That's again self-updating. Branch office scenarios, self-updating, and if you want minimal software running on it on the cluster nodes, you want to go with remote updating, right? And if you really want rich progress updates, so basically in either mode, I'll show actually the self-updating mode in a bit in the demo. But in either mode, it gives you progress updates as the operations happen. Hey, this patch is being installed, this node is rebooting, et cetera, as it happens. But with remote updating, you get a much richer set of functionality because you're directly tapped into the PowerShell pipeline of that session. Hotfixes. This is, so when we shipped the beta release a few months ago, we did not have the support for hotfixes in that release. And this was like one of the first questions that I almost always ran into when I presented this to customers, right? What happens to my hotfixes? Because it turns out that installing hotfixes is also a fairly important activity during patch Tuesdays, right? I mean, you're really not only GDRs, not only the stuff you get from Microsoft Update, but also these other types of updates, either hotfixes from Microsoft or maybe even third-party driver updates, right? What do you have a solution for that? Because they all, when you think about it, all of them tend to affect the continuous availability value proposition. So we have a pretty rich and extensible hotfix installation mechanism built into now the RC release. This is the brand new feature that we have just added. I'll talk to them a little bit more. And all you do is at the time you kick off the updating run, you basically say, hey, I want the traditional Windows update behavior, or I want the hotfix behavior, right? When you want the hotfix behavior, you simply provide a pointer to a file share and say, hey, this is my file share. This is where I posted all my hotfixes. Go pick them up from that file share and install on all cluster nodes. And then there's also a configuration XML file that there's a XML file that comes with the box, right, with the operating system that knows how to install MSU, MSI, MSP kinds of packages. But you can obviously customize it to install pretty much any update you want to install on all the cluster nodes. Really, the configuration rules in the XML file are really the key to flexibility, and I'll point them out during the demo. So Erin, in her presentation, right, she talked about the SHA hashing and how that ensures that the updates are delivered securely to the individual Windows Update agent instances running on the clients from the WSL server, right? We have a similar question that comes up when you think about hotfixes on a file share. Well, what happens to the process of pulling down those updates from the file share? Is it, how about if someone else puts other malicious software, malicious updates on that file share, right? How about mutual authentication? How do I know that someone else is not spoofing my file share server, right? So there are all kinds of security issues to think about, and we do address them all in box. That's the good news. And this is showing let's just briefly mention that. So hotfix config file is that sort of basically a set of extension rules, MSI, MSU, MSP, as I mentioned. And then there is a way to customize using what we call as the folder rules. The reason we call them folder rules is because they're simply keyed to the folder name. So whatever folder name, for example, my SW update type there, whatever folder name you have, you simply define a rule with the same name and put all the special software updates you want to be installed using that folder rule. And that's basically it. You can have the special software updates applied to all the nodes, as I'm showing there, if you put them under cow hotfix all. Or you can have the special software updates only going to a node or subset of nodes if you put them as a subfolder of that node name, right? So strict ACL checking. Let's just run through a couple of security aspects of hotfix patching feature. Meaning the file share, the tool can automatically make sure that only administrators have write access to the file share in question, so someone else didn't accidentally drop something into the file share that you're about to use for your hotfixes. And then mutual authentication, it checks, make sure that there's no spoofing going on, there's Kerberos mutual authentication. And data integrity checking, when I say data integrity, it is the assurance that the data in the patch, right, has not been modified on its way from the file share to you. And there are two ways of doing that. One is SMB signing, and the other is SMB encryption. SMB encryption is the new cool feature. You probably already heard about that in Windows Server 2012. You could use either. SMB encryption, of course, gives you additionally privacy as well while the data is in flight, right? But in either case, you get data integrity checking. Yeah, I think we talk about that. So with that, I guess I'll pause here and switch to my demo and sort of touch on a bunch of things that we already talked about. All right. So let's start with the failover cluster manager. Actually, you know, before I go there, I want to show one other thing in the slide. Sorry about switching back and forth. I want to show the setup of the demo, so I don't show these things in abstract. So I have a cluster here, a file server cluster that has SMB that has an SMB file share which has transparent failover enabled on that. And on that file share, I have a SQL database. And that SQL database is in use by SQL computer, that's database server that's running, and that continues to do create some activity on that file share by doing database operations, right? That's, while that's all going on, we will go ahead and patch the file server cluster. And the SQL application should not take an impact because of the fact that we are patching it, right? That's my demo setup. Now, let's go back to the, yeah, okay. So this is my failover cluster, and it has a few file server, clustered file servers running on that. In this case, I have four of them, and this, we're gonna focus on this particular file server cluster for the purpose of, for demo, right? And I guess I cheated a little bit. Sorry, it actually has three nodes and as opposed to two nodes, but that only makes things more interesting, hopefully. So that's my file server cluster, and I'm gonna go to my SQL machine and show you the setup there, right? On the file server, on the share, file share that's exposed by the previously shown cluster, I have a database running, right? And I'm gonna kick off some SQL I/O activity from this computer. And when I do that, I'm also monitoring what's going on in terms of the data bytes per second on that file share in this perfmon window. And I'm gonna keep this running, right? Throughout my patching cycle, I'm gonna keep this running, which means my SQL app is continuing to do I/Os to the file share, writing its, to its database updates, and then I'm going to just keep monitoring it. And we'll keep it running, and we'll go back to our node one. That's running. So let's look at how easy it is to kick off cluster-aware updating, as I was showing earlier with a screenshot. Now, so I'm running it from one of the cluster nodes. I have, I guess I'm in node one at the moment. So I'm going to simply hit dot and connect. And that brings up, that connects to the cluster, and it brings up, this is the cluster-aware updating UI, right? The notion of connecting to a cluster is, that's really the context that the UI is operating under at the moment, right? And it's showing me the last update time and what was the individual node level status, and then it shows me the aggregate rolled up status down here at the bottom for the overall cluster as a whole. And let's just quickly look at the cluster self-updating options, and we will touch on others as well. If you remember, the self-updating mode really allows you to configure the cluster to be in self-updating, define a schedule, and let it go, right? So let's inspect the configuration. I have, in fact, already configured it for self-updating. So all I'm going to do is just walk through the wizard and show you guys how easy it is to do this. It just gives you an option to enable, disable, or remove the self-updating mode. And then you can define a schedule. And this is maybe like the third Tuesday at a certain time or second Sunday, whatever, right? You can define all those combinations. You can even define a daily schedule or a weekly schedule if that's your preference. But although most folks probably will stick to monthly schedule. Then it shows you all the options that there are a bunch of knobs. For example, how many retries is too many retries, right? What happens to if a patch installation fails, right? In some cases, when we talk to customers, they want to retry. Sometimes, no. And then sometimes you may want to retry it only one time or two times, right? That's one example. Then how long is too long for the patching to run? Let's say if your IT maintenance window is like 2 hours and you want this to only run for 2 hours and stop after that, whatever the status is, right? So you can say, hey, my stop, that's what we call as the stop after time here. And these options can all be set. You can say, I can only want it to run for 120 minutes, and that is it, right? So all these options are possible. And one of the other things you will notice is that these names may look a little cryptic, and that's we basically kept them the same, identical to the PowerShell parameter names. So that's all intentional. So you can quickly map these names to PowerShell documentation. And of course, we have a built-in static help file as well that explains to you what these options really mean. And one thing I want to point out on this screen is the fact that right now it's configured to this hotfix plugin. I hope you can see that back there. And there are two plugins. There are Windows Update plugin and hotfix plugin. And when we go to the next screen, this is where we configure the hotfix root folder. This is where you are storing your hotfixes, and this is where your configuration file is. And you can also configure if you want to require SMB encryption or not. That's part of the UI options as well. And then you can impose strict ACL checks or not, right? So those options, let's leave them unchanged. And that's basically it. And once you do all that, this is the PowerShell commandlet that is going on under the covers, right? Look at this long commandlet here. It is actually pretty straightforward. It looks really long because of all the different options we have defined in the wizard. But that's basically what's going on under the covers. Now let's cancel out of this because we haven't really changed anything. And I want to now kick off the real update itself. So when you configure a cluster to be self-updating, then kicking off an updating run sounds a little questionable, right? I mean, once the cluster is self-updating, you don't need to kick off anything. It's ongoing thing based on the schedule you have defined. So the only reason I'm kicking off the run now is just for the demo purposes. I'm basically going and telling the cluster to update now, right? Because just to show you the self-updating process in action. So when I do that, that's essentially what the commandlet reads, right? You can update now with that cluster name using the schedule that was already defined, so you don't need to specify any options at the moment. And sorry about that. So the other nice thing is it gives you the ability to preview the updates that you're going to install, right? So this is the preview screen. And this preview tells you what updates will be installed once you run the run, right? So it's telling you in this case, right, it's pretty simple. All it's doing is really going to the file share that you have already configured, and it's telling you all the updates in that file share. But in the case of Windows Update or WSIS, it does a Windows Update scan on each one of the cluster nodes, and it could be different set of updates applicable to different nodes, and it basically compiles a list of them. And you can get the overall picture of what updates are going to be installed in that way. So let's do update. And what it really is doing is it is going and kicking off the self-updating functionality as if the schedule has come, even though the schedule has not really come, right? So the UI, what the UI does is it detects that the run is in progress. Now because we kicked off the run from the same UI, it looks a little obvious, but the nice thing about this is you can sort of tap into a run in progress from any domain joined machine, right? You can, if the run is in progress, you can sort of connect into that run in progress and see what's going on. And that's really what's going on here. It's connecting to that. And the first thing it does is, of course, it scans for applicable updates on each one of the cluster nodes. And then it puts the node into the maintenance mode. This is, remember when the animation I talked about, this state where I'm draining all the workloads and I'm putting it in a special state so new workloads cannot fail into it while I'm patching. So that's the maintenance mode, right? I put the node in the maintenance mode, and it's giving you sort of blow-by-blow account of what's going on. Once it puts the node into the maintenance mode, it installs all the updates. And if reboots are required, it reboots them. Right? In this case, though, the reboots are not required simply because that's the set of hotfixes that I picked that don't require rebooting for demo purposes. But if reboots are required, it goes through multiple reboots, multiple scans, and if there are dependent updates that just become applicable after installing the first set of patches, it pulls down those updates as well, right? And so it essentially orchestrates the end-to-end updating process for the entire cluster. And while all this is going on, our SQL application should continue to run, right? So it's continuing to run. And here is a nice transition that you see here, right? So the SQL I/O is going on. Now all of a sudden we saw a dip there. And why is the dip? Well, that's essentially when the file server role is failing over from one node to a different node. And that's why we're seeing that dip. And remember, there's not an I/O failure per se, right? There are zero I/O failures. And there comes the second dip when we are failing back the cluster, the file server back to the original node that it was on. But in either case, the I/Os are continuing on. There has been no I/O failures. And again, they picked up back up again. And the SQL application that's running is continuing to run. It hasn't reported a single I/O failure. It's just brief hiccup, actually two hiccups in this case, once when failing over the workload and once failing back the workload. But it saw two hiccups, and it's just continuing on. That's really continuous availability in action, right? There's zero I/O failures, no downtime, and guess what? We just finished patching the entire file server cluster, unbeknownst to the SQL application, right? That's really the cool thing here. With cluster-aware updating operating in conjunction with continuously available workloads, right? Okay, with that, let's switch back to the slides. All right, that's basically what we demoed, with the exception of we had three-node cluster as opposed to the two-node cluster, right? Okay, so the next set of questions usually that I see are coming from a more deeper perspective, right? I mean, how can I use it? I know what the feature does. How can I use it? How do I relate to this? How do I build on top of it? Hey, I have a different patching solution altogether in my data center. How can I integrate into it, right? Let's go into those aspects so you have a complete understanding of what's going on. So this is basically trying to relate across different segments, let's say if you're working for a company that's in the business of like mid-market enterprise, right, applications, you're supporting those as your cluster administrator, as the cluster administrator, and you want to use cluster-aware updating. And here is, and this sort of gives you a sort of high-level overview of what might be going on under the covers. And of course, your situation may differ a little. You may be using certain types of workloads, may not be using other types of workloads, et cetera. And the downtime for you is really you have promised certain SLAs, and you want to keep up those SLAs, right? And the usage fit might be self-updating and remote updating. You can use either. And most likely, you're in a larger enterprise environment. You may want to start using the PowerShell commandlets, which have much more capabilities, even more than what the GUI offers, right? You can start with those. That would be a good starting point. If you're working for a company that's doing hosting, private clouds, here is another way to think about it. In this case, your customers are really external, right? Your clients, for the hosting company. And again, the prescription is generally the same, right? Self-updating and remote updating either is usable in your scenario depending on your preference. And from a usage perspective, you may prefer UI or PowerShell commandlets. Either might work, although PowerShell commandlets are probably more where you want to go in your hosting environment, depending on how big the hoster is, right? And you're thinking about branch offices and small businesses with only a handful of clusters. Then you have a bunch of appliances, let us say. In that case, the problem is not so much about SLAs or lots of business revenue, but really the problem is there's no local IT expert, right, who can take the cluster through patching motions every month. So that's the case where you most likely will want to use self-updating. And probably the preferred way of using it is UI, right? Again, these are roughly the sort of things to think about, and that's how we are positioning it, but you're welcome. Yeah, sure.
Can you do this across forests?
I'm sorry, across forest, did you say? Not across forests, but across domains within a single forest. And another way of relating to this is, let's say there are two persons, yellow person, red person, right? Depending on your cluster administrator or you are an application owner who is running business critical applications on that cluster. And this is how you really see value from cluster aware updating, right? One is you can update multiple clusters in parallel. You can kick off a bunch of them either using manual means or maybe you can configure them all for self-updating, and in either case, you can do multiple operations in parallel. And then anytime you can tap into a run in progress and monitor how it's going and stop it, cancel it, monitor it, whatever, right? And the nice thing, the larger business value is you can really deliver on your SLAs that you have with Josh, who is the application owner in this case, right? That's the nice thing. And if I'm Josh, right, what would be my value? What you from your side, you really don't, and if let's say you're using continuously available workloads like the transparent SMB transparent failover that I talked about, right? In those cases, you really don't have to worry about planned downtime, and you don't have to have a long negotiation on what would be the right way to fit that downtime into your user requirements, right? That's the nice thing. And there's really no downtime here. Previously, there's a certain planned downtime whenever your cluster administrator comes up to you and says, hey, I need to patch the cluster that you're running your app on. You don't have that anymore. And there's no complex contingency planning because there's really no downtime. You don't need to worry about, hey, how can I make alternative arrangements, right? So that's one way to relate to cluster-aware updating in your scenario. And the other question is, how do I build on all this, right? And PowerShell commandlets is like the obvious starting point here. There are a bunch of commandlets, around 20 commandlets we ship as part of the operating system. And I'm just showing some of the sort of most important ones that you might want to use if you're starting for the first time. But there are a whole number of other things as well. Now, you can do a number of things based on these PowerShell commandlets, right? You can build larger data provisioning workflows, because when you think about it, when you're bringing up a cluster for the first time, one of the things you want to do is patch it to the latest patch level after provisioning it. So you can do it there. You can also do multi-cluster past use day workflows, or you can use it to also integrate this into service desk kind of setup. When you get a call saying, hey, my cluster is missing all the latest patches, or missing a latest patch foo, how do I install it, right? So in those scenarios, you can integrate this into your existing workflows, and of course, there are a bunch of other commandlets as well. And all of this documentation is available on TechNet, and you should feel free to browse it and send us questions if something is not clear. The other interesting thing that we have done in the feature is we have built-in extensibility. So cluster-aware updating has a bunch of core logic that doesn't really depend on what specific patching tool you're using to patch a server computer, right? We have logic that worries about moving the workloads, failing back the workloads, making sure that the quorum stays intact throughout the patching process, reporting, aggregation, all that logic is basically the same if you use Windows Update, if you use WSUS, or if you use a third-party patching tool. So what we have done is we have built in concept of plugins, and this plugin essentially can support one type of updates. Right, I'll show the example to you. All it does is it is looking for, downloading, installing. It knows how to install a specific patch install tool. Right, if you have a third-party tool that you are still want to continue working with, this is a great tool. So here's the scenario, right? So we have two plugins that we ship with part of the operating system. One is the Windows Update plugin that knows how to interact with Windows Update agent running on the cluster nodes, which means it can support Windows Update or WSS delivered updates. And then we have the Hotfix plugin. We briefly talked about the Hotfix plugin earlier in the slides, right? That's where you can point to a file share and have any hotfixes installed. But the nice thing about the way it's architected is we have, let's see if I can get this to work. Yeah, so they're the hotfixes we ship with. But they both use a plugin API that's actually a public API. That's the exact same API on MSDN that we use internally as well. So what this means is anyone can come in and can build a custom third-party plugin that knows how to talk to a third-party patching tool running on each one of the cluster nodes, right? And like I said, the plugin documentation, pretty detailed documentation, is on the web. It's on MSDN and TechNet. Feel free to browse through that, and a whole bunch of PowerShell commandlet documentation also refers to plugins and explains how these commandlets work in the context of a given plugin. Right. And the other cool thing that we have added, by the way, in the RC release that we just added is you can mix and match plugins. For example, let's say you want to install updates from Microsoft Update and also hotfixes together in one updating run, because you get one IT maintenance window, and during that window of time, you want to install all the patches that you want to install. So in those scenarios, the nice thing about mixing and matching is you can really specify multiple plugins. And why? I mean, this is something we heard from customers when we showed them the beta release. They basically told us, hey, you got to support using multiple types of updates in one updating run, because they might require rebooting. And rebooting takes some time and causes prolonged, that eats into your maintenance window. The fewer the reboots, the more things you can do in one maintenance window, right? So what it does is you can install all these different types and take one reboot cost, so to speak, right? Let's see. The examples here, I just wanted to show a couple of real examples of how this works. Just focus on the highlighted parts for me. Cow plugin name, Microsoft Windows Update plugin, comma, Microsoft Hotfix plugin. So what I'm doing really here is I am using two plugins, and I'm using them both as part of the same PowerShell commandlet, and I'm giving parameters for both of them. That's what the CAU plugin arguments means, right? I just give a comma separated list of two sets of plugin parameters, one for this plugin, one for the other plugin. And what the tool does internally is it runs through the plugin specified first in the command line, and then runs through the second one. And you can define dependencies between them as well. You can say, hey, run the plugin serially. If one plugin fails, stop, don't go to the next one. There are ways to even customize the behavior that you want. Yeah. No. Right. From cluster-aware updating perspective, all you need to do is really point to an SMB share. Right. It could be, you could reuse some of the same file servers if you want to. That's an option. But really, from our perspective, you just need to point to a file share that's accessible. We just need read-only permission. We don't change anything, save anything off on that to mess with anything else that may be going on. We simply read off of that and install the patches.
Right, but I don't want to have to download patches from WSUS to synchronize with Microsoft. And in a separate file share, pull the same patches.
Sure, you don't have to. That's basically what I'm saying, right? And also, the patches that you download with WSUS, they're really GDR updates coming in from Microsoft Update, right? And the hot fixes that are used here on the file share are really like hot fixes that you can download manually and you would have to apply manually previously, right? So these are not the ones that come through Windows Update. Does that make sense? These are a separate class of updates that you can manually download. Right? Basically, when you run into a problem, Microsoft support might give you a hotfix that's basically only on an as-needed basis. Right? So all those updates, if you have a bunch of clusters that all require that specific hotfix that you're hitting, all of them are hitting that problem, you can put them put that hotfix that you just got from Microsoft support in a file share and ask the tool to take care of it all for you. So you don't need to manually apply to each one of the cluster nodes. All right, so let's go to a couple of deployment considerations. And this is really based on feedback from our TAP customers so far. And I thought it would be very helpful to share that with you to see what kind of issues that you should be cognizant about when you're deploying cluster-aware updating. First of all, it supports only Windows Server 2012 clusters, right? That's something you want to keep in mind when you have clusters that are running earlier versions of Windows Server. That's something to keep in mind. And then the other thing we keep running into is you may have auto-download or auto-download, auto-install settings also configured on the cluster nodes, or maybe SCCM does patching for you for your cluster nodes, right, on a schedule, or WSUS, something. The important thing to keep in mind is for you to really get the full value out of this, you really want to configure only one tool patching the cluster, because you're really thinking about continuous availability, high availability, and making the workload moves happen all in a way that's service aware, right? That's really what's cluster-aware updating at its core. It's service-aware, it knows what it is, what the service availability is, so it makes sure that the cluster quorum stays intact. So if you use some other tool in conjunction with CAU, then you don't have that guarantee anymore. Both tools cluster-aware updating could take one computer down and the other tool could take the other computer down and you don't have cluster service anymore. Right? So you want to be careful about that. For WSUS-based deployment, with the new RC release, WSUS 4.0, that's part of Windows Server 2012, is fully compatible. It works great with cluster-aware updating and Windows Update. If you're still on the beta build, there is a workaround there, but presumably you don't need it if you're already planning to, or if you are already on the RC build. And the WSUS server that you may have with based on R2, that's not yet compatible with cluster-aware updating. That's one of the other questions I frequently run into. It will be by the time we ship Windows Server 2012, but it's not yet. The proxies. This is sort of like one of the most frequently asked questions, right? So if you need a proxy to get to Windows Update or to your WSUS server for that matter, if you need proxy for downloading or looking for patch availability, then you want to carefully look at this, right? You need to configure proxy in all the cluster nodes, obviously, but you need to configure it for the local system account, because when the WMI video provider runs for cluster-aware updating, it actually runs not as the admin user, but the local system. And when it runs as local system, you need to configure the proxy not for your account, but for the local system account. And the way to do that is using this specific command that I'm showing there. And that local in double quotes is required. That's basically what sets it all for the local system account. And obviously, the nodes need to be configured for remote manageability, right? This is the default for Windows Server 2012, so if you install it by default, you can manage it with WSMan, with WinRM, but If it is disabled for any reason, you want to turn it back on. That's how cluster-aware updating manages the updating process. And the firewalls, that has also been one of the interesting issues. With firewalls, the reason firewall becomes important for us is when we are restarting a computer after updating after installing the patches, right? We need to be able to remotely connect to that computer and restart it. And that requires a firewall port for that vininit.exe program to be made available. There are a couple of different ways of getting around that. Obviously, you could set up your firewall in a way that this doesn't become an issue. Or we also have a built-in parameter for add cow cluster role PowerShell commandlet, where you can say, hey, I want you to automatically enable to find out what firewall rules are related to this behavior and automatically enable this for me. And you can do that. So we have worked with the firewall team to make sure that there is a built-in rule for that vininit.exe, the exact scope we want. And that's already in box. All you need to do is specify this additional parameter that we have just added in the RC build, and that automatically does it for you on every one of the cluster nodes. And the other thing is GPOs, right? If you're setting firewall settings using group policies, you want to make sure that your GPOs are not conflicting with this, right? I mean, if you, in other words, the enable firewalls parameter that I just talked about, it can't really fight with group policies and win, right? You just need to set it in a way that they align. So in summary, right, these are the takeaways I would like you to think about when you leave the session, right? First of all, it's a built-in cool new feature in Windows Server 2012. It knows how to preview, scan, install updates in completely end-to-end orchestrated fashion. And there are two modes of operation, self-updating, remote updating, and depending on your usage context, one might appeal to you better than the other. It's extensible. You can build on top of it. You can extend it. If you have other patching solutions in your data center, you can integrate into those using the plugin mechanism and some of the pre-update, post-update functionality that is, you can customize it in a number of ways. And that's all in Windows Server 2012. And we have a bunch of pointers for more information. There's a lot of documentation available on TechNet and MSDN for this feature. And there's also an understand and troubleshoot guide that's pretty extensive. It's about 50 to 60 pages, so you want to take advantage of all those in deploying and using the feature. And there's also a blog post down at the bottom that would come in handy for you. And these are the related content with the other sessions. Some of them I talked about, continuous availability and all these sessions, right? Feel free to attend those to get a better feel for continuous availability and how cluster-aware updating fits into the overall continuous availability theme. Right, these are the resources, and I guess this evaluation, please do so, and I guess that's it. Thank you very much. Thank you. I'll stick around for a bit, and if you have any questions, feel free to come up to me and we can have a conversation. Thank you.